The difference between excited and nervous is psychological, not physiological, but it's I'm now psychologically excited to do this. So the more I train, the more I know how to use my tools, the more I slow down because I know I'm more efficient. I'm not karate kicking the door. I'm not doing stuff with the irons, you know, at the front door. No, I know. And it's just like, all right, I'll force it now because I can.
Firehouse Vigilance presents the Weekly Scrap, a podcast dedicated to the never-ending fight against complacency.
Corley Moore, Firehouse Vigilance, it is Weekly Scrap number 237, joined on this episode by Paul Capo. He has been a firefighter since 1996, serves as Division Chief of Operations and Training with the Estes Valley Fire Protection District in Estes Park, Colorado. And I'm still reeling from the news, but we're going to talk about it. But in Estes Park, Colorado, prior to his position in Colorado, he retired from Clearwater Fire Rescue, where he was a lieutenant on Truck 45 downtown. Paulie Capo is the founder of When Things Go Bad, Incorporated, where he develops a vast complement of firefighter curriculum and training on multiple subjects in fire service academia. He and his crew can be seen on Fire Engineering's Training Minutes, as well as When Things Go Bad training digital video series on YouTube. Paul has, he has the BAs, he has the masters, he is not afraid to put in the work. Most importantly, he is a passionate in all areas of firefighting. It is my absolute pleasure to have you on as the guest of Weekly Scrap number 237. Welcome, my brother, Paul Capo.
Thank you for having me. I've been excited since we spoke about this a couple months ago, so I appreciate it. I'm humbled to be here.
I'm excited, brother. This is it's already been like bombs dropping tonight before we even went live. Is there anything I missed? Anything you would like to add to the introduction?
No, you hit it.
Awesome. Okay, I'm checking. Amanda is checking Instagram for us. She says it's working. It sounds good. Sound and video is good. Okay, so it's working. Everybody, I'm Samless tonight. Sam is doing the internet struggle bus that I went through last year. He is now fighting it, and so now it's me. And so I've got a laptop here, two internet set up, and my guest, Paul, and then the audience. So all that being said, let's talk about those beautiful sponsors. The OG sponsor of the scrap is Kehoe's. You can check them out online at kehoes.com and follow them on Facebook. Affordable Drill Towers, on a mission to bring you cost-effective and versatile training props. With more than 60 drill towers installed, the Affordable Drill Tower comes in several configurations and comes standard with a standpipe system. Choose from one or two sets of stairs, place it against your Connex boxes for multi-story access, or freestanding on a slab. All models are NFPA 1402 compliant and gain you ISO credit. The only thing you can't do in an Affordable Drill Tower is live fire training. And of course, pump and roll using the Affordable standpipe prop. You can roll your Affordable standpipe prop into the classroom where you can talk about standpipe theory and PRVs and all that kind of stuff. And then you roll it out into the parking lot and actually pump on it for realistic flows and pressures. It comes with up to 7 standpipe valves that can be upgraded to PRVs. The Affordable bailout prop allows you to practice window bailouts, ladder high point rescues. It's only 5 feet wide, 7 feet long. The Affordable bailout prop can roll under any 12-foot overhead door, so you can train on the apparatus floor or in the parking lot. Call Steve, 844-55-TOWER, or drop an email to info@affordabledrilltowers.com. Firefighter safety and accountability starts with being able to quickly find and identify individual firefighters operating on the fire ground. Identifier Safety combines the best in photoluminescent materials for durable firefighter identification solutions that can glow for up to 20 hours, no switches, no batteries, which means being able to rapidly identify firefighters by name, by unit, or assignment, even under hot fire conditions, all specifically designed and tested for the rigors of the job. Be seen. On scene, identifiersafety.com. And then last but not least, there's a hidden gem of a conference in the Midwest. The 41st Annual Fire School is happening April 6th and 7th in Parsons, Kansas. Come for a full day of lectures on Saturday or the full conference with Hot Tracks Sunday. Lecture is $50, or you can do the whole conference for $125. That includes lunches. Social event Saturday evening, multiple live fire classes in acquired structures, and a live wildland fire class. It's the best of the Midwest. From tactics and leadership to culture and mindset, the instructors can relate to major metro firefighters or the most rural volunteer settings. Check them out today, LCC Fire School on Facebook, or search for LCC Fire School for more details, class descriptions, and the registration link. Man, I'm telling you, they still had spots. It's live fire and acquired structures. They still had spots. So go grab them. Man, it's such a value. I will see you there because I'm lecturing there. So that's it. We're ready to rock and roll. Okay, Sam is checking in. Sam has checked in on the laptop. He's watching for your questions. So, everybody, I'm gonna see what we got coming at you, Paul.
Okay.
They're saying sounds good. It's working great. Most of them were replying to me saying it sounds good, working great, coming in clear. Checking in from Florida. Let's go. That comes from Cody Brooks. All running smooth. Looks and sounds great, guys. Okay, IG is good. There we go. The man, the myth, the legend. Looking forward to this scrap. That comes from Scott Vatican.
Oh.
I might even say it wrong. Vatican? Yeah, clue me in, Scott. Notepad and pin at the ready. Let's go. Comes from Steve Kaiser. Checking in from Australia. Paulie is the man. One of the best in the fire service. That comes from 850 Fireman. There you go. Pulaski County, Georgia. Hell yeah. With 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 rocker horns coming at you from Dave DeMart. So there you go. There's a lot of hype coming at you. So.
Thanks, guys.
We will get right into it. We'll get right into firefighter rescue and firefighter survival. I'm going to throw it right into your wheelhouse, basically right into when things go bad. What are we getting right as a fire service, and what are we still missing the mark on? And it's a broad toss so that you can take it whatever direction you want, but that'll be the opener as we discuss.
All right. Well, I'd have to say that we are getting a lot right. I am extremely optimistic and where we're going, but more importantly of where we have been. When I got into fire service 28 years ago, firefighter rescue was not really much of a thing, right? So it wasn't tangible, so to speak. So 1993, Bryceland Street, 3 firefighters died. Jim Crawford, you know, started making American Heat VHS tapes and we were watching them. And of course, 1950, and we'll go back to the establishment of Rescue One, right? In New York City, that's the sole, the first company dedicated to save other firefighters. So yes, it's been around for over 100 years. However, it wasn't taught in minimum standards fire academy. There wasn't much classes that you could go to learn how to not die the same way that we used to die. With that said, the last 15, 20 years, I believe that we've been doing a lot of right things. Of course, now we have a standard, right? And a PA 1407, we never had. So that means technology has now got brought up to speed in regards to UACs are now a standard, as we all know, that never used to be. We not only went from Scott Ripak 1 to 2 to 3, and now we have the fast pack. So we're getting smaller, but yet more volume. So I know I'm coming at it from all different angles, but I believe the fire service culture, right? Is culture just what we do? That's the definition. My definition of culture is doing firefighter rescue and firefighter survival, two separate entities, from day one in fire academy that I'm seeing. So without getting into techniques and skill sets, I believe we're doing a phenomenal job in the last 2 decades. So
love it. I absolutely love it. So that is what we're getting right. So I want to say, what are we still missing the mark on? I want to. Okay. I still want to get that in there.
Okay, I'm here, you. And I kind of intentionally.
If you want to, it's your show.
Yeah. No. So this is, I guess, again, is getting better, but I still get frustrated at certain things in regards to firefighter rescue and survival. It's the I guess, recognizing the space you're going to be at when you feel like death is imminent, either on yourself or another brother or sister firefighters. Now, of course, I watch your podcasts and I read books, student of the job, and we're talking about this way more. But I title it as the physiology of self-preservation. And that is transitioning from your prefrontal cortex, that cognitive and rational mind that we have right now, to your amygdala, right? So we A lot of people say different coins that in different terms. And you're a million brain, your amygdala, and gaining success there as much as you can, or eliminating getting to that space, is where we haven't hit the home run. I'll just give you a couple supporting details on this. So
love it.
July 25th, 1987, John Nance falls in a hole, 27-year veteran in Columbus, Ohio, right? Goes in, fight a fire. He's a few months out, retiring, falls in a hole, not injured, right? Not in fire. Fire's moved on, degraded the floor, but the joists were still intact. Like wasn't the end of the world if we look at it now, okay? Right. So Columbus Fire went and attempted that rescue, and we could look at that rescue solely, though there's many others, and find out, it's like, man, all this time to do the rescue, I'll skip to the end right now. They never lowered him air after plan A or plan B or plan C was failing. It's like, how come they didn't lower John air? He was conscious. He was alert. They touched him. He reaches his hand up. How come they didn't lower him air in the nozzle? Like, this is rational behavior. Like, this is just, like, this is, right, common right. sense. However, I'm being facetious with the common sense part. Let's just move back a little bit in the rescue. You know, Columbus Fire tried to use saws to enlarge the opening, and how come that didn't work? Well, the smoke choked out the saws. You know, everyone online's answering that. Yeah, the smoke choked out the saw, or they put the ladder in, it was straight up and down because the hole wasn't big enough to be on a, you know, 75 degree climbing angle. So straight up and down. John Nance, his last attempt, he climbed that ladder and he hit his head on the floor joists over and over and over. And so if you think about the setting there, what happened was it's straight up and down. He's on the wrong side of the ladder. The ladder, if he would have went up this way, it would have went out the hole. But he's up this way and he's hit his head on the floor. Right? Makes sense. So John Nance, the perseverance took over, and he kept hitting his head until you succeed or you die trying it. And that's what happened. But you would think he'd be like, you know, there's got to be a hole somewhere because the ladder came through it. How come, you know, I have to go on the other side. Just nitpicking this is just for one example.
Right.
So now I still see drills in firefighter rescue arena where they have to calculate the depth of the hole and then pull up hose and divide it by four and tie knots in it. This isn't a textbook, actually. This drill exists. And not understanding that amygdala transition, right?
Right.
Right. Without getting off on my whole little lecture here, that skill that I just mentioned is unachievable in that environment. Now,
in that environment,
if we were rescuing a civilian in a manhole and we had to do some calculations and create a mechanic, you know, all of it, absolutely. We have fine motor skills because our blood is not shunting from right, all of this. So I guess what we're doing wrong is all of us, right, still needs to understand that physiology change when we feel death is imminent. So we can simplify the skills, make them pass the three E's, right? Are they effective? Are they efficient? But most of all now, are they executable under survival stress? Mm. Now, executable under survival stress, we could talk for the next few hours on what does that mean, right?
Right, right.
Now we have to understand the physiological changes. So, and only in that arena, like we don't have to discuss this when we're forced indoors or, you know, or stretching lines, of course. But so that's where I think we could just do a little better on that.
I love it. Are you ready for your first? A great answer to the question. Are you ready for your first question from the audience?
Let's go.
I've got a serious one. Then I've got one from Sean Becker who says, do you miss T-45, Polly?
Yes, I do, Sean. Yes, I do. Very much so.
I figured that was kind of a soft toss. And then Rob Ramirez chiming in because this is who I learned most of my stuff about lizard. You say the fancy term amygdala, and I try to pronounce it right and not say Amy G. Dahlia, right? And but he says lizard brain, and that's what I absolutely identify with. Lizard, when I fall back into my lizard brain. He says, this is the OG of all things firefighter survival and rescue and physiological changes. His message had a tremendous influence on the Mayday mindset. So there you go. But the first question coming at you that's serious was from Preston Lyons, coming at you from Colorado. Chief, we are often taught in the academy to move quickly and execute tasks as fast as possible. How do we teach them to slow down and not rush into their own mayday?
Sure. Well, in I think another audience member of yours, Matt Coakwell, is teaching a class for me next week while I'll be out of town. And one of his stations is the disorientation station. And the whole point of the disorientation station is to not get disorientated in the first place, right? So how we reorientate ourselves. And I'll tell you, it's a great question because we have to. There's a couple ways I can tackle this question, okay? So because I just got out of that physiology quick little over spiel, when we get amped up, right, our cones and our rods and our eyes change shape. They do that after catecholamines get released. Catecholamines are like epinephrine, norepinephrine, dopamine, and part of a lot of awesome things is tunnel vision, and it's awesome when it's awesome. It lets you focus on a task-oriented skill. It kind of blocks out things. Like if you're boxing and you're in the ring, right? You don't want to hear your mom saying, "Oh, you know, step left." You know, you want to be focused on the jab coming. So tunnel vision isn't necessarily a bad thing. However, in our arena, it almost certainly is. So, one of the things to answer your question on the physiology side is we need to slow down. So we need to slow down. So I know you asked how to, and we'll kind of get there in a second. But if we slow down. Now we go to Matt Coakwell's start of his station is we get to read the building. We get to see, that's a bay window in the front by the front door. Okay, that's our living room. And on the Delta side, I see 236-inch high sills with a small frosted glass in the center. So two bedrooms and a bathroom. There's a bump out on the Bravo side. Oh, that's the stairwell. So will never read a building like this if you have now this tunnel vision going on, right?
Right.
So Andy Fredericks, right, said, he coined the line, when garbage men turn the corner and see garbage, they don't lose their mind, right? When we turn the corner and see fire, I mean, we shouldn't lose our mind, right?
Right on.
As we get a little amped up, absolutely, right? We're fighting fire, we're rescuing people. And again, this physiological change is not always bad. So, revert back to the question. One is slowing down. And the best way to join your somatic nervous system with your autonomic nervous system, right? What you can't control and what you can't control is breathing. So we could start eliminating some of those physiological amp ups by just breathing, whether it's box breathing or skip breathing, et cetera. So breathing, right? And I'm saying these like small little tangible things because the overwhelming way to overcome this is experience. But how are you going to get 20 years experience, like right now? Because the more experience you get, then the more inoculated you get to these jobs that we go. And they're not all run-of-the-mill jobs. But a lot of that you be able to comprehend more. So to answer your question on one aspect is we slow down by breathing. Okay. I would say another way, right, that we could maximize that experience word is by realistic training. So studies have shown that by realistic training can stress inoculate yourself to the real thing to the point so much where you could have so much realistic training where it makes the real thing pretty much a non-event. I'll use this as an example. Bomb techs. Let's say that dressing the Hurt Locker was an old movie, right? They dressed in bomb suits and they
you hurt me when you say Hurt Locker's an old movie, but go ahead.
Yeah, well, I'm with you.
Well, sorry.
And they're walking down the road. Well, these bomb techs, biometrics go down the closer. So their heart rate and their blood pressure starts going down the closer they get to the bomb.
Oh, wow.
Like, how does that even make sense, right? You think the threat's higher, but it's not. It's because now they're in control. When the further they are, they're not in control. So you go through some realistic training, right? It doesn't take much to activate your midbrain or to do some stress inoculation. It doesn't have to be extreme. But then when you go to these jobs, you've been there before. So back to the question. Slow your breathing on the way. We'll definitely slow that physiological rise. As well as, of course, realistic training multiple times. We'll get some stress inoculation in, and then you'll be able to kind of comprehend a little more, where you could read the building, do a good rig to door without tripping over something silly, et cetera, right?
Right on.
Yeah, and then I would say probably the last thing, and it's kind of to the training thing, is like anything, right? Like Corley, you're speaking next week at FDIC, and many of the audience, you know, they speak, whether it's on a company level or on a grand stage. Well, a lot of times you can get extremely anxious if we're not prepared. But the more prepared we are, the more we know our stuff, right? The more we feel good about it, then you're more excited rather than nervous, right? So the difference between excited and nervous is psychological, not physiological. The same thing you feel when you're both. But it's I'm now psychologically excited to do this. So the more I train, the more I know how to use my tools, the more I slow down because I know I'm more efficient. I'm not karate kicking the door. I'm not doing stuff with the irons, you know, at the front door. No, I know. And it's just like, all right, I'll force it now because I can, you know, but yeah, you gap it and you know, you force the door. So competency, okay, is my third piece to this and my last piece. Competency innately makes you slow down because that's how the senior man does it. They're so competent. They have so much experience. They're like, all right, let's slow down and let's walk down the hill, you know? So the more competent you are, the more efficient you'll be. And thus, in return, you'll be able to be more productive at a slower pace. So competency, breathing, and some stress inoculation.
Love it. Hey, what a beautiful answer. So many sound bites in there. I did the competency on the senior man. And for those who don't know, Google the old bull and the young bull and walking down the hill. And yes, absolutely. So coming at you, following up, you kind of already touched on it, but I do want to hit you with Steve Kaiser's question coming at you from Australia. Could you expand a little more on executable under survival stress?
Yeah, sure. So like I said, we just got to remember that this is in the firefighter survival and firefighter rescue arena. And just to define those, you know, firefighter survival is anything you do to save yourself, right? So it's your headfirst bailouts, your rope slides, your wall breaching to get from a bad environment to another. It's the reorientation. It's the reading couplings. It's, you know, so that's survival. Firefighter rescue is everything you do to save another brother or sister. And that's plethora of skills, right? Up the stairs, drags, packaging. So in those two arenas, now we're talking about executable under survival stress, because where we're going with this answer is you shouldn't be there on the normal fire where you're forcing doors, doing searches, stretching lines, throwing ladders, cutting holes in roofs, right? You should be a little excited, but we shouldn't be going to the point now where physiologically we're getting in a bad spot. So now to answer your question, now that we define those, I said it should be effective. So let me just use the NANS drill as an example, because we were using this. We talked about the subfloor rescue. Is does this move get mass out of a hole? Yep, it does. Okay, it's effective. Is it efficient? Right. That means, like, is it not just this crazy robust drill? Do I have to go to the heavy rescue down the street to get the NANS drill bag? You know, that's not efficient. It's got to be right now. It's got to be like in your pocket. Right now, it's got to be that hose line right now. So that's that. So if it's not one, either one, they got to pass them. You got to make it that. Okay. Like, it has to be now in this arena. And then the last thing to your question is it executable under survival stress? So right now we're using our prefrontal cortex, right? And it's our forebrain, and we're able to cognitively process things, where we can rationalize things, where, here's an example. My brother from Australia, you're driving down the road, right? And you got your kids in the back and they're talking to you, and you're just like zoning out, you know, wishing you were at the firehouse. And all of a sudden a red ball runs in front of your car. So you slam on the brakes. It's like, why did you slam on the brakes? Were you afraid the ball was going to hurt your car? It's like, no, it's the kid running behind the ball that you stopped, right? That split second, it cognitively processes the ball equals the kid. Another way we cognitively process is, brother, spell right now Well, I don't know if I'm asking a guy from Australia. You have to pick Australia, but I'm going to say it anyway. spell U.S.'s first president that we've ever had, last name backwards. Go. Now, we can, right? Where it's like George Washington. So you're like Washington, N-O-T. Like, we can, but it's going to
take. Right, we get there, but it takes, yeah, you got to consciously think about it, very much so.
So it's split second, or you cognitively have to process it. Both of those ways, right, and some others in between, they're gone when we start ramping up this physiology of self-preservation. We shunt blood, as I said before, from our peripherals, our fingers and our toes, to our bigger muscles for strength and speed, biceps, triceps, lats, back, glutes, so we can run, we can be faster, right? So we've all felt that before, that catecholamine release, and we get all of that. So that happens. Well, in lieu of that awesomeness, we lose fine motor skills because the dexterity, the blood, the hemoglobin, right? All that is now getting shunted and it's gone. So just using those two as an example is that the big W drill where I said, where we have to determine how far they're down the hole, get that much length of hose times four. Then we have to do this thing. Now we can't see, by the way, but forget that. And now we have to double them up, and then we got to tie a figure eight on a bite and put these carabiners. Okay. So we're tying knots. We have to do mathematics, right? Like, this is not executable under survival stress.
Right.
Out. But it is effective. Okay. Let's set it. So people like put it in the book. It's the Nance drill. I don't even use the original, the handcuff knot, and we could do it just like that. I would have done the handcuff knot, but it's yet a knot. So we have a way where no knots, real efficient, like really slick. I'll give you one more example, just to and then you probably already understand executable on the survival stress. But our entanglement simulator, you go through an entanglement simulator, and you just have any old wire cutters, and you put them in your pocket, and you're like, cool, I'm golden. Until you get entangled, and then you pull out your wire cutters and you go to cut that AC duct wire that falls on you, and there's a stripping notch in your wire cutter, and it goes right in that stripping notch, and you can't cut it. So you think you're going to go like, oh, halfway, I'm just going to do that and go halfway. No, you're not. Fine motor skills are gone. You are now, you called it lizard brain, right? But you're that midbrain activation. It's only responsible for four things: fight, flight, feeding, and fornicating. So you're in that fight, flight, right? And you're just going banshee on this thing. And perseverance is going to take over, and you're going to succeed or die trying, right? So you can't have a stripping notch in your wire cutters because it's going to be in that arena of firefighter, rescue, or survival. You can't have a Leatherman right on my best day on my deck with no – on my house. I can't open my beer with my Leatherman. You find motor skills, right? You can't have a little safety latch that keeps them closed. Like, those fine motor skills have got to be out in the firefighter, rescue, and survival arena. So – that's what I mean. And every firefighter, rescue, and survival skill set, carabiners, to wrap around your bailout rope, to wrap around a organic anchor in a bedroom, whatever the scenario is, you got to look at that. And you have to understand that, because it'll work on your kitchen table and it'll work in training. But then when it really now happens, it's not going to happen. That's what I mean by executable under survival stress. And that's to the first question you asked me, Corley, is that's kind of where we go wrong, because I read these case studies and we look, I'll stay with the Nance. You look at it and you're like, boom, I got my finger on it. We need to get firemen how to get out of holes. And you're right, we do. And I think we did good. But right. What we don't put our finger on is, how come they didn't lower them air? How come they didn't lower them a nozzle? How come they tried saws? How come John hit his head? Why? Because John's best friend, named Vic Runkle, was at the top of the hole. It was his best friend. He was the best man in his wedding. Mm. Okay? Mm. John is July 25th. He's retiring in October. Vic knows this. He's at the top of the hole trying to effect this rescue. You think Vic's in his right mind? We don't rise to the occasion, as crazy as it sounds. We sink to the level of our training, especially in this. We are the most innovative people in the whole world, firefighters. However, when our physiological, right, when we start changing, things get a little different. So that's what I mean about executable and survival stress. We have to look at every drill in regards to rescue and survival, and we got to make sure that we're able to provide the maximum amount of certainty in that skill when our sympathetic nervous system is activated.
Love it, man. What a great answer. And Steve Kaiser said, great answer. Thanks, heaps. Thanks, heaps. I'll try to do can I do an Australian accent? Great answer. I can't. Oh,
close.
Yeah, terrible. No. All right. We'll work on it in the after party. Jared Terry coming at you. Building on Preston's earlier question, again, in your opinion, what are the best drills that can prepare us for firefighter survival mayday situations? Or just basically, what are your favorite drills to teach?
Oh, wow. Man, there's so many. Well, I just said the NAMS drill. That's a logo of when things go bad, right? You know, I feel so close to all of these drills because there's a fatality associated to all. Mm-hmm. You know, firefighter up the stairs, Vinnie Fowler, 1999, you know, captain in New York, and of course Mark Langbart in Denver on September 28th, 1992, and you know, you get the Pang Warehouse, the wall breach. You know, like every station, I feel so connected to. But let me try to answer your question. I probably have to say the reorientation drill, though it is not our most dynamic drill that you can do by no means, I'd have to say it is the highest propensity to occur, right? I think we all crawled down a smoky hallway. We all got disorientated at one point, right? Whether we're calling for our partner, we have to slow down to hear the saws going to figure out where we're at. So we've all got disorientated. And that could lead to extremely fatal event. And I believe it did to my brother in Shawnee, Kansas, John Glazier, he was a student of mine actually in St. Pete College when I taught at St. Pete College Fire Academy. So he's very near and dear to my heart. So I would say that a reorientation drill and learning how to reorientate yourself, whether it be with floor coverings and of course, you know, doors, swings, and et cetera that we do, is probably a foundational baseline drill that would probably be most likely to happen. Right. So, but yeah, I could go on and on about the drills we speak, but the drills we teach, excuse me.
No. And I love the fact that you say like every one of them is based on tragedy. You know, they're not willy nilly, just someone thrown together. They're all built on a lot that has come before us.
Well, Corley, I'm just going to enhance that a little bit.
Yes.
I know it all. My mentor, Jim, well, I have quite a few, but he would always say, you got to read these NIOSH, you got to read U.S. Fire Administration technical rescue reports. Like, you have to read these things. And I was a brand new firefighter, and I was like, wow, this is pretty morose, right? So I started reading all of these. But I'll tell you, by attaching a fatality to a firefighter rescue drill, not only honors that firefighter and doesn't hopefully make us die the same way someone else does, but it also sells the drill. All, because I've heard this question being asked on your podcast many times, like how do you get the old senior firefighters or the mutts, you know, to get off the lazy boys and train when they don't want to, et cetera. So by talking through a fatality, right, like I did with John or a little bit or of anyone, you say, well, what are we going to do here at this fire department to not let that happen
right
tonight if that happened? And they're like, I don't know. It's like, well, it's unexcusable because we know about it. We know about it. So I have something in the bay right now that can eliminate that from happening, right? So if you just go out there and do the Denver drill, it's like, man, I don't want to do that. It's like the hardest drill there is, right?
Yeah.
But if you explain the instances of short of life fatality about Mark Langbart on September 28th in 1992, and you're explaining this, man, by the end of that video, you got six ways to get him out, you know? So learning from the past, but setting it up by a real fatality really creates buy-in and that I've seen big time. So before, when you go to every skill station that we teach, we unfortunately talk about, you know, the fallen in the past so they don't die in vain.
Right on. Right on. Coming at you, Ben Jones. Love you, Ben. What are your thoughts about the FDTN RIT entry bag and how does it compare to Scott RIT packs and True North bags? So obviously he's comparing to quite a few different brands here, but just your thoughts on them because, well, you're the subject matter expert.
Well, easy with that. First
off, SME, baby.
Anything with Jim McCormick on it, it's gold, right?
Yeah.
There's certain, like, the Nike shoe, right? I buy it, though I don't even have to try it on because it's so credible. And that's Jim. Jim's been doing this forever. And when you have anything with Jim McCormick, you know it's tried and true. Never mind his cadre, but him too. They're firemen, right?
Yes.
They're firemen. They're not engineers in some cubicle that's trying to come up with something. And you know, the true north, you know, I get it. I'm nothing bad about it. I would probably say to you is that do they meet the objectives, right? And by standard, they do. Do they have a UAC? Do they have a mask? Do they have a regulator? Now, the regulator is a crapshoot because it has to be towards the spec that you're going to, MSA towards MSA. But if you have the mask, you can do a hot mask changeover. You just can't do a regulator swap, you know, the EBBS connection that you could possibly give air to. So I'm going to say they're all great because of the objective. I don't like weighing them down with everything in them, right? A lot of that stuff should be in your pockets anyway, you know, a couple little things, especially if your department's trained on it, okay, but there to give you air. I really like the Fast Pack, the latest RIT bag from Scott. I was on the operational committee for RIT Pack 3, and they got the RIT, the Fast Pack right from the RIT Pack 3. Just
nice.
Way more condensed, really quick. And why? It's not as big. It don't have the hard plastic bottom that the RIT Pack 3, you know, but it meets the objective and it does it very, very well.
Nice. So,
yeah.
And I always get, you know, my guests always get leery. Not that you did at all. You'd had great, great, great answer. So please don't take this. But whenever someone brings up brands and stuff, they're like, can we say this on here or not? It's a scrap. You can say whatever you want. Even my sponsors, I tell them, hey, if my guest does not like you, they may say something that you may not like about you. And that's just the way it is. So 100%.
No. And again, you said, what are we doing right? And I said, 20 years ago, we didn't have nothing.
Right.
We were bringing in air packs and we thought we were innovative. And pass devices are growing. Oh, shoot. We didn't even have pass devices back when we were bringing air packs. It was the pull ones. But now look. Our problem is, which one do you like out of all these brands?
Right. No, that's a good problem to have. Again, great. Right. What do you call it? First world problems?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. No, it is. It's great, man. Greg Bieniak, disorientation station. Can you elaborate on what's involved?
Yeah, well, sure. It starts out from the outside, like we do. We size up the building. I remember going in. I'm already going off on a tangent. I remember going in. I was downtown, high rise or on the squad and early on, and I'd go in and Jim Carino would look at me and he goes, what color is the building? I'm like, I have no idea. We'd go in the next one. How many floors is the building? I'm like, I have no idea, right? So he's like, hey, you gotta look at the building before you go in. So it starts out reading the building from the outside. So granted, if you had a tower, right, maybe it's not realistic. However, you could chalk on the outside, different window sills, you know, 54-inch high sills, the kitchen, et cetera, or you could teach this, right? So we size up the structure from the outside. And that goes to commercial occupancies as well. You know, you have a strip center, you know, it's a shotgun occupancy. You only have Alpha and Charlie egress. You know, you're not jumping out of windows on Bravo and Delta. Like it goes, you know, how big is the cock loft? You know, for a 14 feet cock loft, you only have 8 feet inside. Like we could have a problem up here, like Sofa Superstore, you know? So sizing up from your disorientation is the outside. Then once we go in, we start right away. Now, things should match once we go in from the outside,
right,
because
right.
We already sized it up a little bit, right? So if it don't, then we really have to recalibrate or something else is going on. I mean, rare times that happens, but we go in. You know, we run 100 miles an hour to the front door, and as soon as we open it with zero viz, like we go really slow, right? It shouldn't quite happen like that. We should comprehend some stuff on the outside. Not everyone doing a 360. That's not it, you know. But you get inside, and then you start feeling floor covering. So floor coverings start telling you sometimes where we're at. At the very least, it's going to tell you when you're changing space. So let's say you come in and you got some carpet. You're on a wall or you're flowing through, depending on visibility and your tactics. But the next thing is item orientation, and we teach item orientation. So I don't want to know the make and model of everything that and brand name of what you're looking at. I don't want it to be like that. We got to go swiftly. But all right, I got a couch here. I got carpet. I just walked in the door. You're in the living room, brother. So now you're making your way through the house and you transition floors. So a lot of people don't recognize floor coverings. They just haul. But now I'm going into a different, a harder space. Well, I'm going into a different space generally. And it's like, okay, now I'm in here and now I feel a sink. Okay, well, I got hard floor. I'm in a kitchen, right? So we do this all throughout, right? We start going down. I teach something called winging out. So every now and then you wing out, especially when you think you're in a hallway and you start winging out and you feel two sides. It's like, great. And I get really excited when I'm in fires and I wing out because I know victims are on the way. Hopefully, not hopefully, but you know what I mean. I
want to say right on. Safe space. Safe space. Right. You're good. Okay.
The bedrooms and bathrooms are down here, right? So we right. know. You know. All right. So I wing it out hallways. Good. So now I come across a door and it swings away from me. Right. It swings away from me from, let's say, you know, tile floor to now carpet. Right, I'm going to bedroom and I saw the bedroom window on the outside. We talked about the frosted glass here, the other bedroom here. So like it's like clicking in my mind.
I know
so
where I'm at.
The next one, hard to hard, door swings away, hard floor. I mean, all right, now I got a bathroom. Yeah, you got to go in there. You got to check the closet. You got to go in there. You got to check the tub. You know, I already know my next bedroom. So, like, if I start getting beat by fire behind me, like blowing out the kitchen, the line's not in yet. You know, I'm searching ahead of the line on the truck. I'm not really petrified right now because I know I got to, you know, a space I can confine. I got a bedroom. I'll show you, depending on what floor I'm on, but it's like you start just getting more confident as you start going through the building when you know where you are the whole time. So no. we go through and we start feeling all this out. Of course, they're blacked out, right? And they hopefully find everything that they got. And then when they're at the end, we disorientate them. The best we can. We take them through this little maze. We spin them around. We do some things to them. And then we put them in a place. And then we'll say, get out of the building as fast as you can. And I don't want you to get to the front door. That's not necessarily the point. It's out of the building. So if they're down and they wing out, they're like, okay, I'm going to go to the bedroom. They go to the bedroom. They shut the door to the bedroom. Like, here's my room. You know, here's my window. It's like, perfect. And then we'll tell them, like, all right, now get to the front door. I want to see you get to the front door. And they'll go and hopefully get to the front door in an expedient fashion. And if there's a lot of things we interject, you know, during this, like, you know, whether do I feel the wall the whole way or can I go directly to it? You know, so all of those little teaching points. But it's mainly floor coverings, door swings, item orientation is the ultimate thing, right? I don't know where I'm at, but I feel a toilet.
Right.
Right. Item orientation, and then we disorientate them, and it's good. And it's a single firefighter evolution. So how we claim it is, you're part of a search team, but you're like the officer. So you're on the wall orientating, you know, you and your crew, whether it be irons in can, right? So two or three of you, but you don't have the crew. You're not really searching for an objective. What you're doing is you're orientating yourself throughout the building, and let's see how that looks. And that's how we teach it. And so it takes a little bit. You have to throw a lot of instructors in on that, because depending on how many students you have, it's a 1-to-1 ratio.
Right.
You know what I mean?
No. Wow. Time intensive.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. Well, I love it. Fine. Great question. Thank you for sending it. And thank you for answering it, man. 100%. Dude, this is, yeah, absolutely. James Griffin wants to know, what can we do or teach to get a firefighter to call a mayday sooner rather than later? That's a great question.
All right. So I have a twist that's not really supporting your question. So
Okay.
All right, so here we go. The point of firefighter survival training, all right, is to make problems that you would call a mayday for less. So here you go. So there were books of old that would say, these are the reasons you should call a mayday. And it's when you get disoriented. When you are entangled, you call a mayday. When you have to bail out of a building, right? And it would say all of these things. So I disagree with that to a point, because we're teaching how to get out of entanglement. And one of our four ways, it's a PACE methodology, but one of the four ways you get out, I believe, and this is so bold.
Go for it.
You do these four ways, I'm going to say 100% of the time, you get out of your entanglement. Not a collapse, an entanglement. So now when you were entangled yesterday, you might have to call a mayday. But you're entangled now today after the class. You're like, I got this, man. Why? Because I've trained on this. And I got not only stop and back up or swim or cut or doff my – like, I know how to get out. So you don't need to call the Mayday to have the rapid intervention team come in to rescue you because it's a non-event. If we do – you go through the disorientation station. You're like, all right, before I call a Mayday right now and let's change – we're changing the fire scene, right? I'm going to reorientate myself, right? So – I say that, okay, to say that with some successful firefighter survival training, your Maydays can, well, the point is, right, that they should ultimately decrease a little because you know survival skills. However, to back up what you're saying, we need to have a culture to call for help quicker, of course. Right. So I support you. So I use this example now to support your question. Now that I got my thing. Right.
I love it.
We're the only public safety industry that are so prideful to call for help. And let me explain.
Okay.
Police. Right. So me, Corley, yourself, a couple other dudes are driving in our blacked out Tahoe with black rims. Right. Tinted up, driving down the road. We get pulled over by a cop. All right. What they're going to say is, can you send me some backup? And another officer is going to come and one's going to walk on the driver's side and stop at the B post. The other's going to go on the passenger side. They just called the Mayday. They just called for help because they said, I don't want to do it by myself. I can't do it by myself. Army, just use a branch of the military, right? Back in the day, they used to fight in foxholes. All of a sudden, the enemy is overwhelming them in foxholes. What did they do? They go, shh. Get the Air Force in, soften the ground. Air Force comes in and softens the ground. And next thing you know, they come out and they clean it up. What did they do? They called the Mayday. They called for help so their other brothers can come and they can clean the way in front of them. But yet us, we get disorientated in a fire. And now we're anxious right away to call for our brothers to come in and help us so we get made fun of at the kitchen table. That is unacceptable. And I agree with you, and I know where you're going with this question. So you asked more of a question, but I'm taking it as a statement.
I love it.
We need to change the culture, right? That to eliminate this pride, this unhealthy pride. You know what I mean by this, and be able to call for firefighters to come and help early, right? Disorientated, whatever the case, and then afterwards, it's just a pat on the back or cancel the Mayday, whatever.
Right.
You know, this can be de-escalated really quick. But that's the culture that we have rather than trying to get ourselves more and more and more of a mess. So entanglement scenario, I just said that. And I said disorientation. Maydays are integrated in both of those skill stations. Our naked SCBA drill, you have to call the Mayday before you get on the hose to read the coupling to get out. Like you have an SCBA emergency, like Maydays is integrated in all of our, well, let's say all of our stations, but a majority of our stations to call them quick. And now back to the Australia firefighter question is it's got to be executable under survival stress. And we teach who, what, where rather than lunar and some other things. It's too mentally exhausting. So, yes, I am big on Mayday. I'm big on Mayday early. However, you got me.
No, 100%. And I love the fact that the analogy you made to the military and the cops, which is, hey, these are situations where it's like it's not out of the ordinary. It's just normal.
It's normal.
Exactly. Normal. That's it. Yes. Yes. That's the answer to the question. So it's beautiful, beautiful. At first I was like, I wasn't tracking. I'll be honest with you. And then the analogies really brought it home. The stories brought it home.
They call their friends all the time for help.
Yes. Yes.
It's normal.
No, it was great.
Us, we can, and we call each other brothers and sisters. It fires me up.
And James Griffin said, love it, brother. Great answer. Max points. Preemptive max points, but absolutely crushed that answer. Max points. So, I'm going to try and do this in a Basil Ibrahim voice.
Oh, is he on?
I'm going to try and say, bro, bro.
Is Basil on?
He's on. Now that the EBSS, EBBS is universal, you can low pressure buddy breathe from Scott TMSA, vice versa. In the old setup, prior to the conversion to universal connection, you could buddy breathe between two Scott packs. You would breathe down the lowest bottle first. If it was two MSAs, you would breathe down the fullest bottle first. So my question is, now that it's universal, do you have any idea when you buddy breathe from a Scott to an MSA, which bottle is breathed down first, or is there a standard, or do we even know?
You know, I would have to phone a friend, and I have a couple in regards to manufacturers. I would still believe, Basil, that it is and I'm just shooting from the hip,
right?
There's a difference between pressure and volume, right? So I would still believe that this is a volume deal. But yes, before I start going somewhere,
getting into the specifics, and I don't want to put you on the spot, but again, it was a great question because it honestly piqued my curiosity. I'm like, no, because it always, way I learned it was, you know, you're draining the low guy, you know. Absolutely. and then it was, now you're draining the high guy until you're the high guy. But I don't know. So short answer to the long answer to the short question is we don't know. And, it's a great question.
Yeah. And we'll get the answer.
We will. And we'll follow up. We'll follow up in here. All right. Thank you, Basil. Although it was a very long question, by the way. Sam called it a novel. I will say a novelette. All right. Scrolling. I'm scrolling, brother. I got the Mayday question in. That was one of my favorite questions of the night, by the way. Favorite answers to the night. Pocket dump. What do you carry in your pockets for firefighter survival rescue?
Yeah. All right. So I carry my tools on my right, pocket on my bunker pants, and for firefighter rescue, I carry a pair of wire cutters in there, and I carry them handles down and working head up so my gloved hand can find the working head and pull them out, and I don't grab the handle and open that up. But so I carry that in my pocket. I also carry a razor knife, real executable under survival stress, because it's really easy, right? Don't use that so much in my firefighter survival stuff. And one time we did mini blinds, we got caught in mini blinds, and the wire cutters wouldn't cut the mini blind wires, and the razor knife did. But nonetheless, I'm going to add it to my firefighter survival complement, though I carry a bunch more stuff. So wire cutters and razor knife there. On my left side, I carry 40 feet of 8mm PER, so personal escape rope. Whatever the brand is, I like Sterling, but whatever the brand, they all make, you know, my 64 carrier sheath and nylon core or a Technor or Aramid core, however you do it. But 8mm, I like 40 feet, and I carry it in there for everything. I actually give out this sheet of paper, or many sheets of paper, in my classes, and it's actually on my website too, so you guys can go and grab it, of the plethora of things to do with that rope. So here I go, and I'm going to continue answering your questions in a sec. I believe in bailout kits. Okay, I used to carry it on the job, but it's only for bailout. If you use it once, then you got to get a new bailout kit, right? So I agree, and you need it to bail out. However, some departments, and not in high-rise district, or maybe the threat isn't extremely high, I still say carry 40 feet of PER, personal escape rope, and you can use it for everything. By all means, bail out with it, right? But I also tie off my Halligan and throw it out the window of the upper stores and vent the floor below with that rope. I also, if I'm searching, I need to search off a line, I don't feel comfortable, you know, you could, you know, just take my carabiner and search off for 40 feet. I do a billion things. The Nanstril, right, in my pocket, a lot of high anchor hauls with it. I almost pulled a rescue off with this. So, like, the list is dragging firefighters, 2-1, blah, 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 blah. So if you carry something in your pocket, you should be able to use it for a bunch of things. So I carry that, and I use it all the time. And I'll just say for bailout rope. So for that. So I got bailout rope. I got my wire cutters down there. I got my razor knife, two carabiners, right? I carry two carabiners on my hip and one at the end of my rope. So really three. So I utilize that. I carry a second set of wire cutters up here in my old radio pocket, right? So, right, I like that pocket for my wire cutters. So I put a second set there. And last thing I would say is I carry a prussic. I carry 7 foot of prussic that I use for more of a rapid intervention, more for firefighter rescue than I do for survival, but I use it for feet first drags and just a bunch of things. So, yeah. Now I carry a lot more stuff. I carry a lot more. I carry webbing for a hasty harness for civilians. I carry robo grips and multi screwdrivers, and I carry a 15-foot tape measure. Like I carry stuff. I just for firefighter survival, it's those what five things.
Right, right. No, beautiful, beautiful, great answer. Absolutely. All right. Boom. Scrolling. I'm scrolling. I want to hit you with 60 minute. Jake Deal wants to know your opinion. 60 minute rip pack versus 30 minutes. You kind of hit on, you like the fast pack, but can you elaborate which one you like better or why, or go ahead.
Sure. So it's hard for me to say not more air, right? I'll say it's hard for me not to say 60 minute bottle. So final answer. Yeah, rapid intervention isn't rapid and all of that stuff. And I believe we can be right somewhat, but I would say air, like I said earlier about which brand, what's the objective. And if it's to provide air, then let's bring air in. So, you know, I also hear this battle too. It's like the writ bag is just for the down firefighter, right? And like, cool. And you UAC it if that's the case. And actually, I'm going to hit on that here in a second.
Go ahead.
You UAC it and you know, equalizes and everything. And but one out of every five writ team members gets in the trouble themselves. So I have that's the statistic from my trainings in two-story single-family dwellings to two 1,144 firefighters in Southwest Supermarket with Brett Tarver. Yeah, that Brunicini put him in. One out of five RITI members got in the trouble there from that statistic of that. So can you use it for like a rescuer that's run a low on air? I say absolutely, or else like that doesn't make much sense because they're going to be your second down firefighter. So is it primarily for the down firefighter? Absolutely. But it's air. We should not rely on that as rescuers. We should have through some experience, be rotating out and getting fresh crews in there and anticipating that need, you know, with the new standard for 33% of Viber Alert going off. Now I'm seeing it less, that we're running out of air inside and being a little more diligent. But so answer is 60 minute. So I still like that. Now going into airway, this is not your question, but I feel compelled to
go. I love it. I love it when people go on tangents. So please feel free.
I like to say it's focused on the wrapping and the writ bag question, but like Basil said, well, there's four ways that we could put somebody on air. Okay. So we have the UAC. Okay. We know it's standardized.
Right.
And we have the regulator swap for compliant packs, right? Regulator.
Right.
And then we have a mask for hot mask changeover. And then we have, like Basil said, we have the EBBS. Now the EBBS, Emergency Buddy Breathing Connection, that's to utilize that. If the spec of the bottle, because you don't, of that pack has EBBS, you can put air through that, right? It's a closed system. Without teaching the whole thing, right? Those are the four.
No,
my issue with people is this, is that they prioritize those four, and it's grossly inappropriate. So the first thing I say is, what people say is UAC. Well, I'm going to UAC them. This is it. This is all I got to do. I UAC and I'm a UAC. Well, I'm going to throw this at you, and then you'll this will answer my question that I'm proposing myself.
Okay.
Go in a burning building, run out of air, and allow yourself to suffocate with your mask and regulator on. It's not going to happen if you're conscious, right? If you're unconscious, then, you know, okay. You're not going to.
Right.
You're going to now, right? Survive. And you're going to, if you had the composure, you'll take off your regulator, or you're going to rip your face.
Rip your mask off, right?
All right. So if you're focused on my plan A is the UAC, you did nothing for this down fireman. The first thing you have to do is assess them. So it's airway is first, but you got to go to the face. And you got to go to the face and you got to assess. And if they don't have a mask on, the UAC isn't doing nothing for
right,
them.
Right, right.
You got to put a mask on. So is your training to put their mask on, you know, or our mask that we're bringing in? So you got to do something. So you put the mask on. If you palpate their face and they don't have a regulator, and you come in, then it's a regulator swap. It's not a UAC. So my answer is all four are the best. It's the what is the one that you need to do for this down fireman? And then I'll stop there. Does that make sense?
Timestamp, go for the face, said Dan Bender. Absolutely. Thanks for the answer. And going even further, Max points, as comes Jake Deal. You have to troubleshoot first. And Basil Ibrahim said that. Yeah. I like this one. Alan wants to know. I'm not sure which Alan it is, but Alan wants to know, how about the pros and cons of using a pickoff strap instead of traditional air pack conversion?
Yeah. So I'm not exactly sure what you're saying by pickoff strap, but I got a couple in my head. Okay. Whatever works, brother, whatever works. So I've seen, of course, the Howd strap or the piece of webbing, let's say, you know, this big with two carabiners on it, and you clip it and you go between the legs and you clip it on the other, and it's jam up. Right.
Yeah.
And you're converting. I mean, you're doing the same thing as the conversion between the belt. Yeah, absolutely. It's phenomenal. If that's what you mean about pickoff, and I'll talk about a couple others here. You know, people do a cinch strap. And so my only thing, and this is why I don't teach that to the masses, is because my only thing is you have to have that when you need it. So are you carrying in your bunker bag, you know, your bunker pocket? And if so, is it only for that? So you might go 20 years and never use it. Hopefully you don't. Right. But, right. And you carried it the whole time. So you have to have it when you need it. If it's in your writ bag, then appropriate, right? Because you know you're going to a downed firefighter that you might have to package and it's there. So I like those things in the writ bag. But as we know, firefighters are getting saved more by the firefighters surrounding in the building, right? So you go over to them, you go to package them. And again, where is that thing? So I teach the waist belt conversion because it takes nothing, right? No additional equipment. And they have it, right? Because it's on them. So I believe that's what you're saying, but some other things are like, you know, a strap that you put on the shoulder strap and you drag. And I'm not a big fan of those, though. Like I have a Prusik, I told you, and it's 7 foot, and it's not technical rescue Prusik, but a little bigger, right? But you can use that as a leash, but we've known that the DRDs didn't equate to what the intention was initially. There was a phenomenal idea. I was in big support of those, and it's still there for an emergent in my teaching, for an emergent procedure when the pack's off and pack is stripped off, like unfortunately many fatalities in the past. Yeah. So it's there for that. But if you were gonna use something that's long, like a strap or the DRD, as soon as you make your first corner, as soon as you got to go up and over something, you're resorting to the shoulder straps to make that corner to go up and over a 4-inch pallet, you know, like not even much. So the DRD just wasn't. So if you're talking about a strap in regards to drag, don't love it. If you're talking about conversion, which I think you are, I love it. It's just it's got to be there when you need it.
Boom. Boom. Dude, you may have tried to avoid the SME title, but you are absolutely crushing the subject. Let me see what I got. I like this one coming from Matt Cookwell. Chief, how do we get our ops chief to look into different tactics, such as arrival assignments or splitting the truck without seeming cavalier or overly aggressive? For the citizens, not about me.
Okay. Let's see what time it is here, because we could be here for a bit. So now we're changing arenas. So
never know which direction it's coming at you. So go ahead.
I love it. So I want to make sure that I'm staying focused. So I've done this battle before. I'd say, unfortunately, unfortunately, a few times in regards to the ops chief thing. So this is what. I battle it this way, right? So I list all the things the truck does. So the problem with the fire America and the fire in some Northeast, far out West, you know, we could pick the departments that do truck company ops, but they utilize the truck as an engine. And now you're not doing truck company ops. It's whatever, you know, they're pulling second lines, or
right.
They're laying in, you know, they're not even made a lay in. Right. So first off, we have to set the truck up with personnel ability, hence the personnel. The run cards have to be there, that they're going on the assignments that you need them to, and not medicals and everything else. So it's a whole truck culture that has to get introduced. So, and this is kind of the question. He talked about splitting assignments, so I'm going to go there. Say the ops chief, it's like, all right, chief, we know what we got to do when we get there, right? We got to put the fire out. So that's engine company ops. I'll stop there with all of that. But we got to go in and do a search, right? Yeah, got to do a search. All right, ventilation, right? Kind of got to do that one way, horizontally, vertically. Okay, you got to do that. Okay. We got to force the door. Yeah, you got to force the door. Okay. We got to pull ceiling, right? Because it might be in the attic, or just proactively pull ceiling. It might be in the walls, right? We got to do that. Yeah, we got to do that. So we got to throw ladders. I mean, you bought all these ladders. We got to throw ladders for a fireman bailing out, or some rescues, proactive tasks, right? So we got to. So you started listing all these truck company operations. He said, all right, chief, what don't you want us to do? Because if we're taking all four of us here and we're running around the building all doing one thing, then I got to know, what do you want us to do? You want us to force the door? Do you want us to go in and search? Okay, cool. You know, so you can't even search safely with four firefighter crew, right? Unless you split them up. But anyways, so you say, well, I think we can do a lot of them all simultaneously, by splitting up our crew with inside and outside crews. So if we're talking four, now we could talk three firefighters as well, and there's a little different map there, but
absolutely.
And inside and outside crew, right? So we're going to go in, and we're going to go force the door. We're going to go in. We're going to pull some ceiling. We're going to do a search, and we're going to be accountable to the engine for tools, and they're going to be accountable for us for water. And the outside crew is going to handle, you know, ladders and ventilation appropriately. They're going to do utilities, or, you know, that's a heavy thing, or, you know, heavy rescue thing or not. So now you show them and you prove to them, or you tell them, listen, I could be more productive on the fire scene by splitting up my crews and doing this. We'll eliminate radio traffic. How do you eliminate radio traffic? Well, it's very simple. I just told you all the things we're going to do. So the chiefs don't have to tell me
right.
to go in and search. That's what I do. Don't tell me I'm certain. That's all I do. I go in, I force the door, I pull ceiling, and I search. Like, you don't got to assign that. You don't got to assign ladders on the fire ground. That's what they do. So we're going to be more productive. We're going to eliminate radio traffic. We're going to provide a safer scene. Well, how are you going to do that? Well, all the things I just said, ladders are going to be done, ventilation will be done. I'm going to ensure a diverse tool assignment is throughout the building. What do you mean? Well, because that firefighter is called irons position. They're bringing the irons. My job as the officer, I'm bringing a hook and Halligan, you know. So if you're bringing three in, well, that's the can and hook is coming in. Like, the thing that gets me when I listen to fires, right, and they say, they're 20 minutes in the fire. They go, I need a pipe pole in here. It's like, you need a what? Where? Like, every fire you ask, I need a pipe pole in there. How do you not know that every fire you're going to need to bring a pipe pole, right? So we don't have to do that no more. The hook and halyards coming in, the irons are coming in, the cannon, you know, and all this stuff's happening. The VES is happening because that's what they do. And they become very, very, very proficient at it. That's their jam. That's what they do. My driver, my tillerman, and my driver, my outside crew, and all of them on my past department, but they annihilate it. They annihilate the outside. Like, they're on the roof. They're waiting with their rope in the Halligan, waiting to throw it off. Like, Charlie Side's vented, chief. You know, it's like, that's their jam. That's what they do. Bulkheads open on the attack stairwell. So it's not this, the truck pulled the second line.
Right.
Now you're assigning the third, fourth new engine to do truck company stuff. They're just not as proficient. They don't have the tools on the rigs or whatever the case is. So, Matt, to answer your question, this is a lengthy discussion that I would have. I even have a little PowerPoint on the productivity of the truck crew and how I do the different puzzle pieces and then how I put them together. We can anticipate what we're going to have to do in regards to truck company, all of it, but on the fire ground. And we already know who we're bringing, like three, four, you know. So why don't we attach those tasks to those people? And then it's called functional assignments. Functional assignments split the right way, you get so much more done, and I gave you some benefits. So I try to sell it in a way to the ops chief where it's hard for them to say no. They'll be really prideful and stuck in a crazy culture if they're like, no, we're going to use them as engines, or we're not going to split them, which is crazy to me. And you can split a three firefighter truck too. It's two in one, and the outside firefighter does everything but goes to the roof by himself or jumps in a window by himself. Ish, right?
right.
Ish. But right. But anyway, go ahead.
No. I don't want to cut you off. Go ahead. I got something I want to get to though, because
I know. Go.
I haven't touched on it yet. Which is what is your division chief of operations and training?
Boom.
Did I get it right?
You did.
Okay. Division chief of operations and training. But you're at Estes Park now. You had a career and you retired and you are you know still in your career, but a lot going on in Estes Park.
There is.
Like you told me this before we went live, and I said, "Can I bring this up?" And you said, "Yes, absolutely." So go ahead. I want to hear it.
So April 1st, which is like 10 days, right?
And that's not an April Fool's joke.
No. Oh, no.
Okay. Well, I want to be clear.
Actually, I think first day on the books is the 26th of March.
Okay.
We hired a new fire chief, and the new fire chief's Rick Lasky. So Rick Lasky's coming up to Estes Park. And I do want you to know, to go back real quick, Estes Park, okay, smaller fire department, has got a true truck. It's got a true truck, no hose, no pump, no water, and it's six positions and the whole deal. But we can go to Rick Lasky now. Go ahead.
That you told me that like 5 minutes before we went live, and I did the record scratch, like what'd you say? Paul Capo, Division Chief of Operations and Training, Paulie Capo, and then Rick Lasky, Pride and Ownership, coming in, said, yeah, I guess I'll be your fire chief. So, yeah, basically, everybody's like, what did you just, Jake Dale said, what did you just say? That's awesome. Congratulations. Preston Lyons said, what? Scott Vatican said, Lasky for the win. Preston says, does Estes take laterals? Is it Estes or Estes?
Both. I say Estes, but I'm not a.
But you're a transplant, like I would be.
I'm not a native. Yeah, right. Though people say it both ways.
Okay, fair enough. I didn't want to be mispronouncing it the whole time. But I got the pass from the division chief. Does Estes take laterals? What a win! No, is that not crazy? That's awesome, man. I can't wait, dude. I'm so, yeah. That's freaking awesome. Which takes me to one of my favorite parts of the show, which is books or books that you think firefighters should be reading.
Oh, well.
Does not have to be a firefighter book. It can be any book in the world, but go for it.
Good, because the first book I say, yeah, we all should read is the Bible.
I was going to say you have AM plus DG on your t-shirt, so I'm guessing it was going to be the Bible.
I got a few. Yeah, definitely the Bible, but the Bible. And not sucking up to my new chief, but I was reading Pride and Ownership articles before there was a book in Fire Engineering Magazine. And then when the book came, I remember talking to Chief Lasky on the second floor of Hampton Inn and saying, Chief, you got to compile these things. He's like, books are already coming out. So Pride and Ownership just totally changed me when I was growing up in the fire service. Tommy Brennan, speaking of Fire Engine Magazine, Tommy Brennan's Random Thoughts.
Random Thoughts.
Yeah, man. I love tangible, quick hits and their compilation of all his back pages. All right, switch in. I like Atomic Habits. You ever read Atomic Habits?
Yeah. No, I usually rattle off his name. It's not Coyle. It's a...
I like...
Yeah. Clear? Is it Clear? Yeah. Anyway, sorry. Go ahead.
How to touch friends and influence people by Carnegie?
Yes, Dale Carnegie. Absolutely,
yeah,
man.
Carnegie, yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one. It's being just book on humility.
Dude, it stood the test of time, without a doubt. It's been around for like 100 years almost.
Yeah.
No, without a doubt. And I'll tell you this, Pride and Ownership absolutely is one of the reasons Firehouse Vigilance exists. It's one of the catalyst books that I read early. And it was like that started the yeah.
Awesome.
Boom. Yeah. Man, my wife said, I love Estes. Beautiful there. One day I'll get Corley up to visit.
Please do.
There you go.
Please do.
No, I love it. Which takes us to one of my favorite parts of the show. This is the five questions for firefighters. It's been around for a long time, almost 5 years. That's crazy to me to think that it's been around that long. But it has. And currently we're in version 3. This is the third iteration, but it's version 3.3 because I keep tweaking the questions. Basically, there are no right or wrong answers. They are just your opinions, and then the points are passed out by me with the help of the audience. So my question for you, Paulie Capo, are you ready for the five questions for firefighters version 3.3?
I'm ready.
All right, let me pull up this right thing so I make sure I'm in the right place to throw the timer up at the appropriate time, etc. I miss Sam. Sam usually makes this run really smooth. And so, long story short, here we go. What is the skill that has carried you through your fire service career?
Ooh, carried through my fire. Okay. I would say this is great advice, too. I'll give all this to the junior firefighters, but seeking out mentors has carried me through my fire service career. Yeah, without a doubt. And there's been many. There's a couple core ones that really spoke into my life in and out of the firehouse to this day, literally to this day, today. But yeah, constantly do that. Stand on the shoulders of giants, and you can learn so much from experience and et cetera. Yep.
Well, I love it. Now, Paul, do you feel like it was something you actively did, or did you accidentally do it? Or was it a combo?
Good. I guess I was, it went in reverse on the first one. So I was a young kid, and I got assigned to the first station, Station 49, and a senior man there, he drove the heavy, named Jim Carino, mentor of mine. He, after I earned his trust, he took me under his wing. So I didn't seek him out. He kind of seeked me a little bit, and there was a couple instances that I did, whether it be Sunday and people are sleeping on the recliner and I was out in the bay, I grabbed tools off the engine or the truck and I'd bring it in the firehouse. I say, what does this do? And he's like, things are racking up. And he's like, yeah, you're asking that? Like, no one asks that, you know? So, and then he took me under his wing and he started teaching me everything he knows. And I saw the value inadvertently of a mentor. So I didn't know about it. Then once he modeled that behavior, took me under his wing, when I got promoted to driver and I went to B shift, Brian Schomburg, and I seeked him, Sam Willie, seeked him, district chief. So now I started seeking people and they started talking in and I earned their trust and they started talking into my life. So it started me getting drugged through the mud on it. And then I started seeking it out, and I still do it to this day in all aspects of my life.
I love it, man. I absolutely love it. There you go. Easy. Robert Ramirez says, I'm taking the over on max points. Mm-hmm. We'll see. But we'll see. Andrew Frederick said, hot, all caps. Sorry, Frederick. Andrew Fedorka. Let me get it right. Caleb Alexander said, max points can't be great without great folks that have been there before us. Greg Van Ham said, max points. Mentors are the unsung heroes on our departments. Matt Coakwell said, so good, Paula. You have personally changed my life. I love you. Thanks for being my mentor, but more importantly, a friend. So there you go. No, absolutely love it. Easy. Easy max points. Easy over on number one so far. We'll see how it goes. Number two. I love this question. It's Job Town. It's time.
Job Town.
You're in route. You're responding. You got to think of the scene from Backdraft. He's slapping that cassette into that tape deck. What song are you playing in route? No pressure.
All right. No, I think I got one. It's not something I normally listen to, but we're going to the job, smoke showing, right?
Right.
You got your buddies with you. I'd have to go something crazy like Rage Against the Machine, like Killing in the Name Of, I would say.
Killing in the Name Of.
Thinking System of a Down or Korn, but let's go with Rage. Yeah.
All right. I like it. I don't know if Killing in the Name Of has been – I know we've had some Rage before. And there is a playlist that's out there, just so you know. Nice. There's a playlist with all the answers accumulated. So it exists, and yours will be added. So thank you for easy. Rage will get an easy max points from me. Number three. What is your favorite fire service tradition? And I have to caveat this by saying you are not allowed to say the kitchen table.
Yeah, of course. That's my favorite.
It's a given.
Oh man,
I don't want to cut your legs out, but at the same time.
All right. Okay. I would have to say, and I don't see if we can dial this in, and because tradition, man, there's so many ways. I'm trying to answer the kitchen table without saying the kitchen table. Okay, correct. I love the tradition that we have in the fire service of the extended family that we have, like the brothers and sisters anywhere. Like Lasky says, you know, you see a Maltese cross on someone's shirt, you know, you have a friend in the room, no matter where you're at. I'll just give you a couple quick examples to support that. I got a phone call at my desk in Estes Park. I pick up the phone and this guy introduces himself and he says, I'm a battalion chief in Baltimore. I said, all right, what's up? He goes, my son's moving to Estes Park. He's a writer for the local magazine. You know any houses? And I'm like, yeah, not a problem. I go, how'd you know me? He goes, I don't know you. He goes, I go, what are you doing? He goes, I'm calling a fireman. I'm a fireman. I'm calling another firefighter. I know you'd make it work. I got the kid an apartment. I met him. The father came in. We had a beer. It is what it is. I can Oof. Call.
Yes.
I can't tell you how many people right now, Matt Coakwell's on the line. There are plenty others. Call them right now and they could be where I'm at right now and they won't ask. The question only answer is like, who's driving? So it doesn't matter where you're at. Now, so the extended family, the brothers and sisters, no matter where you are, my wish is that we could do that in the firehouse.
Amongst oh, the dude.
Departments.
Oh, so wow.
If B shift and A shift in the same department can do that, man, that'll be beautiful. Because when you see those people on an airport and you see them, man, it's forever love. But anyway, I love that tradition.
Because way to bring it home, Polly. Way to bring it home.
Ops chief now, so that's it. But because a guy that sells insurance don't call another guy that sells insurance in another place and says, hey, my son's moving to you.
Right.
No, man. No, just us.
Dude, I love the answer, period. Because you are spot on. And A, you brought in Lasky and yeah, 100%. And then, but to say, why don't we do it at our own departments, man, that crushes it. That crushes it. That's so true. Absolute max points. That makes it 3-for-3. Here we go. Number four. This is the one I got to work some magic here as I do technology. I got to put a clock up here on you. But
all right.
Four people. You get to pick four people to put on your Mount Rushmore of the fire service. Four and only four. You get 1 minute and go.
Joe Angelini Sr., 63 years old, still riding back step. Love him. Tom Brennan. Captain Brennan, 111 truck, etc. And if it's my Mount Rushmore, I'm adding my two of my mentors. I'm adding, and a lot of people don't know their names, but I'm adding Jim Carino and Brian Schomburn. Done.
Boom. At 36 seconds. I've hit pause so I can get it right. But 30, what does that make it? 24 seconds? Done? I don't know if it's the record, but it's in the discussion. So there you go. Easy. And I love the mixture of legacy, giant fire service, the big picture, all the way down to the people that impacted you. Man, I absolutely love that.
And I see why you gave a time because and a number. Oh, because I could go with names, no, go with names like crazy.
The first few times, it was like 15 minutes of people explaining about how somebody impacted their career. And it was good, but this was so much better. It really does work good. Finally, the question. It is the question that's been around since the beginning, and it will never go away if I have anything to say about it. It is heavy fire, searchable space. I know you were truck 45 guy, but I'm anxious to hear your answer. Like, heavy fire, searchable space. Would you rather be assigned to the nozzle or first in on the VES?
Well, without a big circle answer, I'll say VES and go in and save someone. But I would also love to say the nozzle because that's pretty exciting as well. But VES is my answer.
VES is the answer. There you go. And that officially makes it. Where are we at? 230, 7 scraps in the books with absolute max points. 5 for 5, crushed with arguably the fastest. I'm not sure what the fastest is. The audience may be able to let you know. Here we go. Love hearing mentors make it personal from Andrew Fedorka. There it is. If you can't truck, you can't writ. Great scrap. Thank you. My brother, thank you for sharing your evening with me.
I appreciate it. Thank you all. That was great.
If someone wants to get a hold of you, what is the best way to do so? How can they go about getting a hold of you?
Yeah, you could, When Things Go Bad, Inc. So if you go on When Things Go Bad, search it. My contact's on there. It's whenthingsgobad@hotmail.com. But yeah, website, you can get it.
Perfect.
Phone number's on there too, of course.
Excellent. Everybody else, go to firehousevigilance.com. Vigilantes, go join. $5 a month. You can sign up for a year. I'll be posting the link for the scrap after party. Paul has agreed to come on and be roasted, so he's going to be there. We're going to roast him, which we never do, but it's not the point. We are a group of like-minded souls, man. That's what it is. It's like-minded souls. You are never alone. Go become a vigilante. Next week, it is Robert James, Capital Fire Training. Man, I'm excited for that one. And then one of the most requested people that I have not had on the scrap yet, and it's been a while coming, but it is Candace Ashby. She is coming on. We are going to have a phenomenal conversation. So, Capo, James, Ashby, boom, boom, boom. The scraps continue in killer fashion. Thank you, Paul Capo, for being such a phenomenal guest.
Thank you.
Vigilantes, if you're going to be part of the scrap after party, look for the link in the private group. Sam should post it, I believe. I'm hoping. If not, I'll figure it out. Just be patient. All that being said, audience, I love you. Thank you for being here tonight. What an man, the numbers were unbelievable. The questions were unbelievable. You make the scrap magical. The scrap would not exist without you. So thank you for tuning in live. Thank you for sharing your evenings with me and Paul. Remember, mutts don't scrap. I hope the tones stay silent unless it is burning. Everybody, stay safe out there.
Thanks for listening to the Weekly Scrap. Please subscribe and please share. We'll see you at the next episode.